I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I am the good shepherd, Jesus says to us. The good shepherd always acts in the best interest of the sheep, even to the extent of laying his life down for the sheep. You can tell the difference between the good shepherd and others because others do not always act in the best interest of the sheep. When the going gets tough, they hit the road. Jesus called them hired hands. I have another name for them. We'll get to that in a minute. Only the good shepherd always acts in the best interest of the sheep, even to the extent of laying his life down for them. In saying those things to his followers then and to us now, Jesus has two things in mind. First of all, Jesus is calling attention to his own uniqueness. Following this story in the 10th chapter of John, Jesus goes on in his teaching to make that clear. He says, "The Father and I are one." And again, "The Father is in me and I am in the Father." Words which earned him the threat of stoning and the threat of arrest from those who heard him. But he is making statements about his uniqueness. There is no one else like I am, never has been, never will be. I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. Jesus is calling attention to his own uniqueness. But he is also calling attention to the character of those who follow him. Following this discourse about the good shepherd in John 10, we go on to the next chapter in John, where there is a story which reflects the climax of Jesus' earthly ministry. It is the raising of Lazarus from the dead. And we begin to see in that story and following it, we begin to see pointed instructions for Jesus' disciples. He begins by telling them, "Those who love their life lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will my servant be also. Whoever serves me, the Father will honor." He begins to describe the character of those who follow him. And then later on in chapter 15, Jesus says this, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." And then he makes a statement that recalls what he had said earlier about the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. He says, "No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. Jesus is calling our attention to his uniqueness, but also instructing us into what his followers will look like, what they will do, who they will be. I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. Last Sunday, I quoted for you a story from a book that I'm still reading. The book is entitled, Not a Fan. And the author's thesis is, Kyle Eidelman's thesis is, that Jesus has lots of fans. You know, fan is an abbreviation for the word fanatic. Jesus has lots of fans, but he doesn't have as many followers. And what Jesus is interested in and what he's invested in and what he needs and what he wants are followers. Jesus would say, got lots of hired hands, but not enough followers of the Good Shepherd. And Kyle Eidelman says this. He says, Jesus has lots of fans these days. Fans who cheer for him when things are going well, but who walk away when it's a tough season. Fans who sit safely in the stands cheering, but they know nothing of the sacrifice and pain of the field. Fans of Jesus who know all about him, all his stats, but they don't know him. And he goes on, many of our churches in America have gone from being sanctuaries to becoming stadiums. And every week, all the fans come to the stadium where they cheer for Jesus. But they have no interest in truly following him. The biggest threat to the church today is fans who call themselves Christians but aren't actually interested in following Christ. They want to be close enough to Jesus to get all the benefits, but not so close that it requires anything from them. They want to drive the sheep in directions that benefit themselves rather than leading the sheep in the ways of the Good Shepherd. I am the good shepherd, Jesus said. I lay down my life for the sheep, and I expect the same from you. You all know me well enough by now to know that I have no patience with fans of Jesus. Jesus wants and expects and needs followers, not fans, leaders, not drivers. Most of the fans, you know, they leave the church. They go on to other places where they can find the comfort and the self-interested lifestyle they are seeking. I have no patience with folks who insist on having their way and having things done their way, while what we need to be insisting on is that Jesus have his way with us. I'm interested in making disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. And that's tough work for me, and it's tough work for you. I have no patience with fans. Another observation which Kyle Eidelman makes in his book is this. He says, whenever Jesus had a large crowd to address, he most often preached a message that caused them to leave. At least a significant number of them, because he wasn't interested in the size of the crowd. He was interested in the level of commitment. He wasn't interested in a crowd of fans. He needed followers. He needed apprentice good shepherds, if you will, not a bunch of hired hands. When Jesus invited people to follow him, some people signed up and did, but most decided to walk away. When Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, it's not a warm, fuzzy thing. Shepherds work hard. They put their lives on hold. They put themselves in danger, always acting in the best interest of others, not of themselves. When the going gets tough, fans hit the road. Only the good shepherd always acts in the best interest of the sheep. Only those who are following, modeling their lives after the life of the good shepherd, lay down their lives for the sheep. Now, let me say a brief word to you about what it means to lay down your life for others. It doesn't mean you have to die. Sometimes you do. But most often, we hope not. The best example that I can come up with, or the best image, is that of a police officer or a fireman or a soldier. Every time an officer puts on that uniform and walks out the door, they lay down their life for those whom they are serving. And on occasion, rare occasions, thankfully, their life is required of them. But mostly not. Most times they come home in the evening or at the end of their tour. But every day they put on the uniform, they lay down their life. What Jesus is saying is he does the same and he expects the same of us. Not that we necessarily die doing it, but we need to be all in for Jesus and for Jesus' kingdom. One day a man stepped in off the street to a convenience store to buy a newspaper. He noticed that the owner of the store behind the counter kept looking out the window. He kept looking past his customer out the window, and he had tears in his eyes, and one of those tears had rolled down his cheek, and his customer was a bit concerned, and he said, "Sir, are you all right? Is there anything wrong? Is there anything I can do to help you?" And the store owner said, "Look out the window there." He said, do you see that bench across the street? There's a bench at the bus stop right on the corner. He said, "Every day, there's a woman who comes and sits on that bench. And she'll sit there for an hour or so. And she'll take out her knitting or take out a book. Or sometimes she just sits. The buses come and go. She never gets on a bus. The buses come and go. Nobody ever gets off a bus to see her. But every day she's there." Well, last week one day, it was kind of chilly outside. And there was nobody here in the store. So I poured a cup of coffee. And I walked across the street and sat down next to her and gave her the coffee. We had a chance to chat. And she explained to me that her only son lives a long way away. She last saw him 2 years ago when he came home and visited her. And then he went back to where he lives. And he got on the bus right there on the corner across the street. And that's the last time she saw him. And since then, he's gotten married. And she's never met her new daughter-in-law. And then they had a baby. And she's yet to see her only grandchild. So she said, "It helps me to come here and wait. I pray for them as I sit here. I knit little things for the baby. I imagine them in their little apartment saving money so they can buy the bus tickets and come home. And I can't wait to see them when that day comes." Well, as he was telling that story, he kept looking out the window, and the tears never disappeared from his eyes, and he kept watching, and then all of a sudden his eyes couldn't be diverted from the window, and he was riveted on what was happening out there. And his customer looked, and there at that moment a bus pulled up, and a young man and a young woman got off the bus, and she was carrying a baby. And this woman stood up and her face erupted with joy, and there was nothing like it when she saw and held the baby they brought with them. And the store owner watched, and the only thing he said was, "I'll never forget the look on her face. As long as I live, I'll never forget the look on her face." Well, the man took his paper and paid for it, and he went on home, but he was troubled by what he had seen that day. Not in a negative way, but he couldn't stop thinking about it. And he laid awake all night thinking about what he had seen out the window of that store. And the store owner watching it happen. And in the morning, he sprang out of bed and dressed. He ran down to that store and he ran in and up to the counter. And he was shaking his finger in the owner's face. He said, "I know what happened here yesterday. I figured it out. I stayed awake all night and I figured out what happened here yesterday." He said, "You sent him the money for those bus tickets, didn't you? You sent that man the money to come and see his mother." And the store owner smiled and he said, "Yes, I did." And then He repeated the statement he had made the day before. I'll never forget the look on her face. As long as I live, I'll never forget when she saw her family, how she smiled. That man had discovered something of what it means to follow the Good Shepherd, to lay down your life for others, to hold the best interests of others so close that it becomes more important to you than your own best interests. He understood what it was like and what it meant to act in the best interest of the sheep. You can tell the difference between the Good Shepherd and others, because others just stand and watch. And when things get tough, they go the other way. Not much care, not much interest. Only the Good Shepherd and those who follow the Good Shepherd always act in the best interest of the sheep, even to the extent of laying down their life for the sheep. Well, there's a picture for you of one way it looks and something of how it feels to be a follower of the Good Shepherd, to act in the best interests of the sheep, even if it's required to lay down your life for the sheep. To follow Jesus, you see, interferes with your life. There's no way to follow Jesus without having him interfere with your life, because the best interest of others does become more important to you than your own. Amen.